Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. The show about theater on the radio. From drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, also known as Jojage in Ganiagahaga and Muniang in Anishinaabe, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah Day, recording from home on Thursday, June 2nd, 2022. On tonight's show, my guests, meet Martine Donneveld, one of the new co-artistic directors of Festival Transamérique, as the FTA marks its 16th edition.
It's a dream job, really. It's like, FTA is very well known outside Montreal, Quebec, Canada. Jesse Mill and our predecessor, Martin Fauché, and the founder of the festival, Marie-Hélène Falcon, have been traveling widely, you know, all throughout their professional lives. So me being in Europe, I saw them come to our festivals, and everybody knows that FTA is a wonderful place to work.
Actress and writer Miriam Cummings spins a fairy tale about dating, inspired by her grandparents' own love story.
This text is a direct transcription of life interviews I did with my granny as part of a project when I was studying theater at Concordia. And my granny was a beautiful storyteller, and her story of meeting and falling in love with my grandfather is one that the entire side of my maternal side knows.
And speaking of love, we will meet two funny musical people, burlesquer Velvet Latouche and stand-up Leland Beckman, who are both preparing for their separate and solo fringe shows.
I've spent many evenings with Leland Beckman, and something that's great is funny, very smart, but also, you know, it takes like, he takes like the bad, the dirty, the bad thing you don't want to talk about, and then makes it okay to talk about it, and it's hilarious.
Velvet Latouche is the sexiest performer in Montreal. If you thought you knew what sexy was, well, just wait until you see sexy playing a piano at the same time as being voluptuous and lovely and intelligent and funny.
Before we begin, some updates. The Fringe Festival kicked off on Monday with the Mega Fringe for All preview at Club Soda. I was there, I loved what I saw. Most shows begin next week, and tickets are, of course, already on sale. Something like $20,000 worth of tickets have been sold already. Go to fringemontreal.ca for the box office and more information. Or call 514-849-FEST. There are also some hirings to report in the theater world. Last week, Black Theater Workshop announced its replacement for departing AD Quincy Armorer. It will be Diane Marie Bridge, an award-winning theater maker, writer, director, and creative producer. She is currently the Associate Artistic Director at the Luminato Festival in Toronto, an artist in residence at Necessary Angel Theater. She joins the team in September. And a Winnipeg-based dramaturge and director will fill Micheline Chevrier's shoes at Imago Theatre. The award-winning Krista Jackson, the founding artistic director of Zone 41 Theatre in Winnipeg, will begin her mandate in August. Now, on with the show. The 16th edition of the Festival Transamérique continues until June 9th. The internationally renowned Performing Arts Fest has some of the wildest, most eccentric, and thoughtful programming from here and around the world. And this edition is special because after several years at the helm, director Martin Fauché has stepped away from the role. In his stead, two ambitious women are leading the charge as co-artistic directors. There's Jessie Mill, who worked under Martin for several years, and Martine Donneveld, who has come to Montreal from Germany. Despite all the excitement of opening day, Martine made time for us to speak last week. Here's my conversation with new co-artistic director at the FTA, Martine Donneveld. Welcome to Upstage, Martine. Great to have you here.
Hello, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
We're fresh off opening night, the very first day of the festival. Now it's day two. How are you feeling?
Honestly, the whole team is a bit exhausted already, but it's been a super nice evening yesterday. The whole community really gathered around the festival. It was beautiful to see all those faces again. And the opening show went really well.
That's fantastic to hear. This is also a very special year for you because you're at the helm along with Jesse Mill as co-artistic directors. So tell me about what you anticipated when you first took on the job.
Well, Jesse and I have known each other for a long time, in fact, 6-7 years, really. And she'd been coming a lot to the festival. I was directing in Germany. So there has been an ongoing conversation between us about artists, about shows we'd seen, about what we think festivals should address, how they should work together with artists, how communication should work. So that conversation has been ongoing for a long time, really. And then applying for the job at FTA has made that even more tangible, more concrete. So we knew where we were headed, I'd say. But then obviously encountering the artists, their projects, starting to talk to the communities, getting a feel for what working in this particular city means, changes things slightly, but I feel that we've been able to stick to the original project.
And why did you want to head up the FTA? Like for you personally?
It's a dream job, really. It's like FTA is very well known outside Montreal, Quebec, Canada. Jesse Mill and our predecessor, Martin Fauché, and the founder of the festival, Marie-Hélène Falcon, have been traveling widely, you know, all throughout their professional lives. So me being in Europe, I saw them come to our festivals, and everybody knows that FTA is a wonderful place to work. As for me personally, I really wanted to do something together with Jesse Mill, because she's such a cherished and trusted colleague. And then I felt it would be a good idea also to leave Europe, because I've really had the largest part of my career in Germany. I come from Luxembourg. I felt I knew how things were working in Europe, in a certain number of European countries. And just leaving that well-known terrain and placing myself in this different context is really rewarding.
Yeah, you're on new undiscovered terrain.
Yeah, exactly. And it means like questioning my position as this white European woman who takes a position of power this side of the Atlantic, that comes with its own pitfalls and questions. And it's a lot about soaking up knowledge, really, listening to people, figuring out the colonial past and present of this particular place, and then, you know, trying to be useful within that context with the experience I have, the knowledge I have that comes from a different context, but being very mindful of how things are done here and how we'd like to do things in the future.
There's been a huge reckoning in the art scene in terms of examining the colonial structures of this country and on the, you know, on the local level as well. You know, has there been a similar reckoning in Europe of a conversation, maybe not so much about colonization, but maybe just about power structures and, you know, who gets to be seen and who gets to create? So I'm wondering what the kind of parallel conversation is in Europe.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The thing is, it differs from one country to another. So I'll really speak to the German context for now. Germany is particular in that World War II and the Holocaust have created a kind of taboo around racism. You know, the never again slogan that is so important for Germany has meant that Germany has defined itself as a non-racist country in its foundations. That's what the Bundesrepublik Deutschland, you know, the new Germany is founded on, really. And that has led to a situation where racism is not talked about, and also where ethnicities are not, how do you say that? There's no census around ethnicity. And so that makes it very difficult for racialized people, BIPOC people to address their experiences because there are no statistics, in fact. And that has changed really in recent years in Germany. There's started to be a discussion, people are more organized. And part of that discussion has been a reckoning with Germany's colonial past. which tends to be forgotten because people will say, oh, it was such a short period. But you need to remember that Germany was, you know, while it was going on in the late 19th, early 20th century, Germany was the third largest colonial power in terms of territory and the fourth largest in terms of population. So that's really not nothing at all. That's you know, quite big, and it has led to genocide in these parts of the world. So that's sort of being unearthed, I'd say. And although it's not the same thing in any way, certainly not identical, there is an element of historical reckoning that's happening in Germany too.
It's very fascinating to hear that there is not the same conversation, but the same sense of kind of reevaluating what we're doing and how can we change things today to be more inclusive and more respectful in general. I'm speaking with Martine Donnevald, who is the new co-artistic director of the festival Transamérique, which has just launched 16th edition, ongoing until June. Martine, you've mentioned a few times about how excited you were to work with Jesse Mill, who is your co-artistic director. How was that working between the two of you? Martin Fauché, as you mentioned, he was at the helm for years, calling the shots with his team. But how does a co-artistic director partnership work?
The thing is, Jesse Mill had been here for 7 years as Martin's dramaturg and artistic advisor. So she knows the festival inside out. And you know, the team is still in place. All these people who've carried Martin Fauché's projects are here and are of invaluable support, really, with all their experience and their knowledge. So in a certain way, I came into this as the one new person, you know, observing how things went, trying to make small adjustments here and there. But essentially, this is a machine that works incredibly well. In terms of the relationship between Jesse and I, we find that the ping pong effect between us, the fact that we need to share ideas and like verbalize literally everything that passes our minds, is incredibly valuable, because it means that nothing is hidden from sight. In fact, everything needs to be said, evaluated, questioned, and that creates an opening really in terms of communication with the team, but also with artistic teams, who very often are familiar with that way of working because they themselves are organized in teams. Even if there's one choreographer, you know, there will always be other people around that person, scenographer, lighting designer, a costume designer, and things will be made and produced together. And this element of togetherness is really at the heart of our project with Jesse and I.
It sounds like an extremely fruitful collaboration. And at the same time, I feel like it's fun to take on a new project, but to have someone, like to have a buddy by your side for both of you. And I guess from from her perspective, it might be that you're bringing a fresh eye because you know of FTA, but you're new to the space and you're working with a team, as you said, that's already been in place for a couple of years.
Yeah, that's right.
So I want to get into the shows. There's always like a wide variety, like spanning, like just the most, like in my mind, it's just the most nuts festival there is because there's such a variety. There's so many different kinds of messages and things to see. So can we talk about some of the highlights for you, things that you're excited for?
Elenit by Greek artist Euripides Laskaridis is really amazing in that he draws in stylistical elements from all kinds of stagecraft that are usually not part of contemporary theater, like burlesque, grotesque, absurd things, monstrous, dreamlike creatures that appear that very often are considered not serious enough. Well, he loves it and he brings it all into his own kind of stage language that's really unique. So you'll see a character that has a skirt as wide as the world with other characters appearing from beneath that skirt. You'll see twins who multiply. You'll see a T-Rex, a dinosaur in high heels, and many, many more amazing characters. And the best thing is the whole thing has spoken language, but it's an invented language. So it's a language you don't know, but you'll understand perfectly.
I've just heard the costumes are absolutely amazing. So that's Elenit by Euripides Laskarizi. There is a show that brings in beluga whales. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, while we were curating the program, at some point we had an intern who just came in for a week, and then she said to Jesse and I, oh, well, there is so much water in this program. There are so many shows that speak to sea mammals, the river, you know, holocenes with the aquarium, rising sea levels. So there are really different aquatic elements throughout the program. And the Beluga project is one of them. We're particularly proud of it because it's a project from Gaspésie, from a region that hasn't been well represented at FTA at all, really. An artist called Maryse Goudreau, who is multidisciplinary in her work, but really also a visual artist. And this particular piece started as an art book, so a work of art that takes the form of a book, a beautiful object, small, intricately made with text and small envelopes that are pasted into the book with little images of the beluga whales. She's been doing research on the belugas for 20 years. So she's been swimming with them, recording them, researching everything that concerns them. And in this particular book, she's gathered 150 years of speeches at the Commons, at the Chambre des Communes. Not sure of the English. The House of Commons, thank you. Where people speak about belugas and sea mammals. And over 150 years, you'll realize that in the beginning, these creatures are considered resources. It's about exploiting them. It's about making money. And then as time goes on, you know, protection becomes more important, protection of the habitat, of the species itself. With also more and more women and more indigenous people speaking up in terms of protecting their environment. And so this has now been turned into a theater project, originally by Philippe Cyr, who didn't have time to bring it to FTA. So Joanne Herberlin has taken over from him. And this will be presented close to the river, obviously, at the Plage du Quai de l'Horloge. So in front of the very place where a couple of years ago, a whale had stranded during the pandemic, I think at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yes, that's right. That is the voice of Martine Donnevald, who is the co-artistic director at the FTA. The 16th edition has just launched. Tickets and more information at fta.ca. Martine, is there anything else that we can add? What are you like really excited for personally?
Personally, I'm super excited about one of the very last shows we're presenting. It's called Laboratoire Poison. And this is really one of the smartest, most intelligent pieces of documentary theater I've seen in a very, very long time. It's a European show on one of our largest stages, directed by a woman called Adeline Rosenstein. And she's been delving into the archives, searching for material around historical resistance movements. And she spans a period between the Belgian resistance fighters returning from the Nazi concentration camps all the way to the assassination of Patrice Lumumba, the first democratically elected president of Congo. And what she's interested in is how we mystify, glorify, or demystify those heroes or victims of history, and how knowledge about history is constructed in our heads. And she uses the theater as a technical device to make us aware of how we make these decisions. And it's really quite stunning.
That sounds amazing. I always have more questions about all of the shows, but we'll have to point people to the website. Martine, it's been so fun to get to know you and to find out more about your work. I do want to ask one last question. I was reading Jim Burke's write-up in the Montreal Gazette, and I thought it was really interesting that you and Jesse referred to the fact that you were trying to take a less Eurocentric view of the programming. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, you know, Montreal and particularly European capitals have always had a close relationship. And in fact, that's true for many parts of the world where colonized or formerly colonized places have kept close relations to their former, mother countries, metropolis, whatever you want to call them. And we feel that we need to represent the world in a different way. We want to bring voices to these stages that belong to other territories. So we've drawn up an ambitious map of how we want to travel. It's a long-term project, really. But the axis of the three Americas is going to be very important in the coming years. We brought a number of African shows this year. And just to give you an idea of our next travels, I'm going to Whitehorse in the Yukon next, right after the festival. Jesse's going to Hastad in northern Norway. So we're really exploring different parts of the world and seeing what we can bring and what resonates with audiences and artists here.
You're going on the world picking up ideas, almost like you're going to pick berries and bringing them back and to make a big pie for everybody. It's been such a pleasure to get to know you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks a lot, Sarah.
That was Martine Danneveld, co-artistic director, along with Jesse Mill at the Festival Transamérique. You heard Martine give a lot of good recommendations for the fest. Many shows are close to selling out, so don't delay. You can head to fta.ca for tickets. The festival continues until next week, June 9th. Tickets and more information at fta.ca. I'm Sarah De A. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come, meet Velvet and Leland, both very funny, both very musical, both performing solo shows at the Fringe. Oh, and they also happen to be in love. Actress and writer Miriam Cummings is remounting her one-woman show, The One, which had a sold-out run at the last quote-unquote normal Fringe back in 2019. She has been tinkering and revamping the show with a residency at the Siegel since April, along with director and dramaturg Olivia Woods, a process that Miriam is calling the most rewarding learning experience of her career. The show is inspired by her grandparents' love story. Miriam's heroine, Emily, is about to turn 30, and she has 1 week to find the one while navigating dating apps and relying on her grandmother's fairy tale romance. Miriam remounts the show next week at the Freestanding Room on the Main. I spoke with Miriam earlier this week. Welcome back to Upstage. Thank you so much for being here, Miriam.
Thank you so much for having me, Sarah. It's a pleasure.
I'll be honest with you. I was about to say thank you for being here, Emily, but you are not Emily. You are Miriam. You are the creator and the writer of Emily's story. Tell me who Emily is.
I have so much love for Emily. Emily is a woman who is turning 30 in a week. And she is hoping to find a partner in this week and become a power couple. So for Emily, that power couple partnerness represents stability and success and also love. Emily wants love and she is working hard to get it, using dating apps and getting insight from her followers on Instagram. And that is her main goal.
It's interesting to say power couple because that implies that your the other person in your partnership is going to be someone who is as equally or more impressive than you are, that you're going to be considered a team, that the couple that people want to invite to parties or can make things happen. That's a lot of pressure.
Pressure is a good word, I think. Emily is intense. She wants the things that she wants in a very specific way, on a specific timeline, and she does not want to waver. I would say Emily is a binary person. Yes or no, successful, unsuccessful, success, failure.
It puts so much pressure on the person here. There is a fantastical kind of wrinkle here in that she has a kind of example that she looks towards, a fairy tale example. Tell me about that wrinkle in the story.
One of the three characters in this solo show is Emily's grandmother, Isabel. And Isabel tells the story of meeting and falling in love with Emily's grandfather. over the course of the show. And this text is a direct transcription of life interviews I did with my granny as part of a project when I was studying theater at Concordia. And my granny was a beautiful storyteller, and her story of meeting and falling in love with my grandfather is one that the entire side of my maternal side knows. So there's turns of phrases that are very familiar to us, and you know the hero's journey aspect of the story, and Emily's grandmother, Isabel, very much is an homage to my granny, Christine Irene Dean, and Christine is who the play is dedicated to.
Can you tell me something about what made your grandmother's love story so remarkable and so special? You don't have to get into the full story, but maybe just something that, you know, makes it so memorable for you and your family.
I don't know that it's a remarkable story. I think she's a remarkable person to me. She met my grandfather when she was 15. He was 19, I believe. She had her first child 3 years later and had two more children after that. This was during the Great Depression, and then with two young children at home, my grandfather went and fought in World War II. And he came back alive and well. And 14 years after her closest sister, my mom was born. And I don't think that's a remarkable story. I think it's a lot of people's grandparents grew up in a time that feels so far away from my experience of growing up. But so much of the values and the worries and the fears and the joys in life, I think I see reflected in my own personality and values that come from, you know, grandparents who reused literally everything. My grandfather at the cottage had boxes of nails in descending useful order, you know? At the bottom was nails that were like completely rusted and completely bent, but maybe could be used for something sometime. So they got kept. I guess, you know, not remarkable in the sense that other people's grandparents had this reality, but they met so young that they celebrated their 65th wedding anniversary together and beyond. And at the cottage, there's their letter from the Queen congratulating them on this marriage. So that, I think, also is fairy tale like to me.
So this is so sweet. It's both an homage, but an exploration of, you know, contrasting romance through the ages, in a sense. What made you want to write about romance and dating, you know, besides kind of telling the story of your grandparents and the lovely way they fell in love?
When I joined the Young Creators Unit at Playwrights Workshop Montreal in 2018, I didn't know what I was going to write about. And that was okay because of the way the program is structured. And it was so supportive and so open to exploration that in the exercises that Jesse Stong led, what came out was this poetry and this text and this longing to understand my relationship to dating and love. What I now know is trying to understand how to detach from heteronormativity and capitalism. And can I do that and still believe in and love the fairy tale love story of my grandparents?
Speaking with Miriam Cummings, who is the performer and playwright of The One, coming to the Freestanding Room a little bit later this month. Miriam, this, as you mentioned, you just reference the development process. This is a remount for you. You went through the dramaturgy process. What's it like to spearhead this very personal project that at one, you know, is pulling from your family mythology and is also an exploration of something that we're all kind of living through, the search for love? Tell me about your process.
The process started off at Playwrights Workshop Montreal in the Young Creators Unit. And that was such a lovely environment because it was a group of people, many of whom were writing something for the first time. My training is as an actor primarily, and have a lot of experience acting. And I have never experienced the level of fear and vulnerability that I felt the first time my writing was read aloud in that studio. It was really different from nervousness I feel around performing. And it has to do with the closeness of personal writing. You know, if someone doesn't like my work as an actor, there's a degree of separation because I'm playing a character and speaking someone else's text. If someone doesn't like my writing, in a way, it's a direct part of me, like kind of an opening of my heart and detaching from that relationship to people responding to or liking my work was a really new thing for me in this process.
It's very vulnerable.
Yes.
How do you feel about the self-producing part of the job, right? You need a lot of confidence, number one, to even get on a stage, as you were saying, to be an actor, but also when it's personal, you've written this, you're promoting it, you're the one getting the word out and beating the drum, right? What do you need to be able to do that and to do it successfully?
Love this question. Being encouraged to share my writing, first with a small trusted group and then kind of wider and wider in concentric circles outward, there's something in that message about keep writing and your work is worthy of sharing that says to me, your voice and what you care about and your lived experiences are worthy of being listened to and seen. And they are not for everyone. That paradigm shift of your voice and your experiences are worthwhile and not everyone will relate to them or be interested has been a huge growth edge for me, honestly, over the past 3 or 4 years. And I think training as an actor and working as an actor, I really absorbed messaging in the entertainment industry that says it's important for people to like you. That's how you get work. That's how you are perceived as professional. That's how you advance. And the thing about sharing your own writing is there are people who won't relate to it or respond to it. And that's the point. That's why there are so many voices that we can choose to read or witness or engage with. And being myself is really powerful. And the people who are attracted to hearing what I have to say are the people I want to share my work with. And that's changed the way I'm approaching this presentation of the show. I did it in 2019, and now in 2022, I'm quite clear that I want people to share it who want to share it. And it's okay if there are some people who don't. And that growth for me as a people pleaser and a good actor and a good student and someone who likes to be liked, that's a huge learning for me.
It takes a lot of confidence and growth to be okay with the fact that you're not going to be everyone's cup of tea. That must have been such a revelation for you to kind of come to that. Do you feel like you wouldn't have gotten to that point if you weren't working with like Playwrights Workshop and working with the dramaturge? It would have taken a longer time to get to that point?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I love dramaturgy. And what I love about it is it gently encourages me to tell the truth. And then when things are not reading as truthful, or the images are unclear, or the train of thought is unfollowable, dramaturgy offers great questions. And that can be in conversation or movement or exercises. And when I tell the truth and I'm clear and I'm specific, that's when the work is exciting. And I can like feel the vibration of the words in my body and in the space. And that feeling of knowing I'm telling the truth, I hear that in my voice and in my body. That's what allows me, I think, to be brave enough to say, okay, I think there's something here, and I am going to promote it because I want people to see it.
Said like a true writer, spoken like a true writer. Miriam, it's been such a pleasure to find out more about Emily and The One. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me, Sarah.
That was Miriam Cummings, the creator and star of The One. She performs her show at the Freestanding Room starting June 10th until the 19th, 4324 Saint Laurent. Three price points. You can go to brownpapertickets.com for tickets and more information, and follow her company on Twitter and Instagram at HopeGrownPro. I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Velvet Latouche is a hilarious musician and burlesquer. Leland Beckman is a foul-mouthed musician and comedian. They're both very tall, very kind, and deliciously funny. And if you didn't know they were already dating, you would want to set them up. But don't worry, this pair has been an item since 2015, after meeting at a show the previous year. And by a stroke of luck, both of them are readying solo shows for The Fringe this season, set to launch next week. Shows that focus on what they do best. For her, cheeky burlesque numbers with a musical edge. And for him, jaw-droppingly funny, foul-mouthed musical comedy. I had so much fun speaking with Leland and Velvet about their shows yesterday. And just a warning, some of our conversation is a little bit naughty. You've been warned. Welcome, Velvet, and welcome, Leland, to Upstage. Nice to have you both here.
Hi.
Hi, Sarah. How are you?
I'm so good now that you're both here. What a delight it is to get to speak with both of you here. Looking forward to Fringe 2022. Tell me about the application process. I'm curious to know if you both looked at each other one day and said, let's put our names in for the upcoming edition. Did it happen like quite so simply and you just waited and both your names came in through the lottery and it was like, oh, perfect. Just like our lives. Perfect.
Well, yeah, we saw that it was coming up. And we had to move fast because, as you may know, this year, the application process happened, you know, just 2 or 3 months before the actual Fringe was starting. So we were both like, do we have a show ready? Are we ready to go? And should we do a show together? Or should we do two solo shows? So to keep our options open, we decided, let's both submit separately. And then we can just make up our minds as we go here.
Right, because if one application had gone through and the other one was rejected, you still have carte blanche to do what you like. So you guys had like a plan and a backup plan.
Exactly. Yeah. For my show, I had actually applied to the Fringe a few years ago and got in, but then it was just timing. I had actually had an injury. And so, you know, I had to drop out because of the injury. And so then when the application deadline came up, it was like, oh my gosh, is now the time. And then boom. Yeah. We made it happen.
It must be exciting for you to finally get your chance on stage because you are a very physical performer, obviously. So an injury would kind of be a preclude for being on stage. So here you are getting your second chance at Destiny.
Oh my gosh, it's so exciting.
Now, I do have to wonder, I'm sure this could be somewhere down the road, but if you were to co-star in a play, in a show together, would it be drastically different from, and we'll get into what each of you are doing in just a moment, but would you have produced something drastically different from what you're presenting separately this edition?
Oh, well, yes, we have a show that we have done together before. And Vella, what's it called again?
What is that show called again?
Oh yeah, it's called Pretty Funny.
Pretty Funny. Yeah.
Pretty Funny.
It's a competition show. Who's funnier, burlesquers or stand-up comics? And so it's a voted by the audience. And they come in and then they get rated right there. And then at the end they win a rubber chicken statue.
So here instead, you're not competing on stage, but you're competing in a way indirectly because you're both going to be at the same venue, vying for eyeballs. Hopefully people can make it a two for one sort of experience and see both of you. You'll both be at the Pitti campus. Leland, let's start with you. An Evening with Leland Beckman. You're known for your dirty sense of humor and your musical stylings. What do you have in store?
Oh, well, yes. I'm glad I'm known for something. I play bass, I sing dirty songs, and I do a little talking in between the songs, and there's a few special surprises in there too. I'm going to have an opening act, you know, a different local comedian each night, kind of open the show. And then, yeah, it's like my hour comedy special. And just be me up there on stage with my bass and just going through the new songs on my new album, because this show is also my debut album release. And so I'm going to have copies to sell, and, you know, on the album, it's with the band, you know, the full band experience, but An Evening with Leland Beckman is much more intimate. It's just me and the crowd. And we'll go through those songs and see if anyone leaves. I personally hope that they do walk out during the show. It would make me feel better about them. But if they're as dirty-minded as me, then I'm sure they'll stick through and suffer through the shame with me as we go.
Yeah, you might have trouble getting them out. You'll have to scrape them off the chairs because there's other shows to follow at Pitti Campus, like Velvet's show, which we'll get to in a moment. Your material often X-rated. I was wondering, is there anything you won't touch or anywhere you won't go material-wise?
Well, I do like to, you know, I don't want to hurt anybody, you know, I think that's the way to go. And, you know, you don't want to glorify, you know, sexual assault or doing bad things to people. But, you know, I tend to try to stick to, you know, what's going on with me and, you know, the different trials and heartaches and hang-ups in my life, or at least the character I'm putting out there. But yeah, we don't want to hurt people anymore, right? That's the new culture, and we gotta it's always been the culture, but it just seems like people are starting to wake up to that reality.
I hear you. What is one of the hang-ups you get to explore in this upcoming album and show?
Well, one of the singles on my album that's out there to be consumed right now on Bandcamp, and, you know, it'll be released on June 10th, is, you know, something that, you know, as an artist, You know, what an artist does is that they take the pain in their life, you know, and they turn that into art. You know, they put it out there, and maybe that's going to help someone. Maybe it'll help the artist. Maybe who knows what's going to happen. And so one of the signals I have is called prolapsed ass. And it's maybe more common than you might think. And that's just one of the topics that we'll explore. That's probably the tamest one.
Okay.
That's maybe the grosser, one of the grosser ones, but, and you know, it just goes from there.
That is the voice of Leland Beckman, a comedian musician who is going to be performing at an evening with Leland Beckman at Pitti Campus. Also at the venue, his wonderful partner, Velvet Latouche, who's going to be presenting her first solo show. That's a bit of a tongue twister, which you were just mentioning. You were hoping to be presenting something like this a couple of years back, but fate intervened and here you are. So Velvet, great title. Evening with Leland Beckman, we have to say, I mean, points for, you know, being straightforward, but it's boring a little bit, Leland. It's straightforward. Velvet's title, on the other hand, please say it to me in your words.
Velvet's greatest hits.
A burlesque musical review by Velvet Latouche. What do you have in store for us?
Yes, well, it is a collection of my signature acts that I've been doing. I actually had to look up the date of when I started performing burlesque, and it was 2012, actually at Mainline.
10 years ago.
Where has the time gone? And I can't believe that it's been 10 years, like now that I think about it. But yes, and my very first show was I did, my gimmick in burlesque is I play piano and strip at the same time. And the first act that I did was to Great Balls of Fire and on that rickety mainline piano. And so the exciting thing about this show is that I've finally gotten it together for my very first bespoke piano. It's a piano shell. It has a super incredible keyboard inside it. And I don't want to give too many things away, but it does tricks. It does different things. So there's lots of spectacle a part of this show. And this show, it's some of my most favorite acts, some of my acts I've been booked the most for over the years. And I've just been polishing them up, making them really, you know, investing in the costumes, investing in the spectacle, and that's what it's going to be. It's transformative. It's psychological. It's sexual. It's a lot of fun.
We had Leland give us details about, what is the cleanest thing perhaps on his album and his show. What is the dirtiest thing you do on stage, Velvet, in this upcoming show? Would you qualify?
Well, I guess there would be, I don't know how familiar you are to like the fetish scene, but there's like, you know, a thing, called like you do a scene, like you do like a fetish scene. And there is kind of a fetish scene that is happening where now some people who are familiar with this act that I've done actually a few times before, but I tie somebody up to the piano. So it's a sort of a fetish thing. I'm going to have my stage kitten, Classy Clara, helping me with that, but it's pretty sexy and pretty steamy. Yeah.
That is the voice of Velvet Latouche, burlesque dancer, who's going to be performing in Velvet's Greatest Tits at Pitti Campus. We're also joined by Leland Beckman, who happens to be her partner and is also going to be performing an evening with Leland Beckman, some of his very dirty songs. I want to go back to the piano very quickly. How long has this special piano that you're developing for this piece, how long has that been in the works for?
It's been in the works in my mind for the past 10 years. But it's just always been a question of finding the right prop maker and frankly, just having the funds and that. But finally, it just got to a point where, you know, I've performed like in Montreal and every venue that I can perform in. I've performed in Toronto as well. And, when I get booked, people get very excited about the piano strip numbers. But then it's, well, does the venue have a piano? Because I need that. It's been everything from like a tiny keyboard with 55 keys, you know, and they think that that counts as a piano. And I'm like, no, that's not the real thing. No. Balancing a keyboard on a bar stool and then sitting on another bar stool, like trying to do the act. So this is really like it's in the shape of a baby grand. It's made by an excellent prop maker, Shop Dogs. And it's this like phenomenal Yamaha piano keyboard. And like I was saying before, I don't want to give too many things away, but it does perform tricks itself, which I'm really excited about, just to punctuate, you know, the acts even more. So that means that hopefully I'll be able to travel a lot more with my acts, and I'll be able to go on the road and Velvet's Greatest Hits going on the road really soon. Yeah.
Sounds so exciting. I'm trying to imagine, like, what does a piano doing tricks, like, what does that consist of? But I will happily wait to go to Pitti Campus and see what it will be like for myself. Speaking with two artists, Layla Mechman as well as Velvet Latouche, getting ready for their Fringe shows, both launching June 10th. Okay, going to put both of you on the spot here. I would like to hear from both of you why we should go see the other one's show. Okay, no, not a lot of time to think. Leland, why should I go see Velvet's Greatest Hits? Go.
Velvet Latouche is the sexiest performer in Montreal. If you thought you knew what sexy was, well, just wait until you see sexy playing a piano at the same time as being voluptuous and lovely and intelligent and funny and silly and amazing. And she just puts it all out there and on stage and in your heart. And she won my heart over many years ago. And I know that any time that someone sees her, she's got a new fan. She has this charisma that just overtakes a room. And, you know, I'm getting choked up just thinking about it.
We had Velvet here holding up her fist to her cheeks, kind of like mock tears there. So that was a sweet moment. I think that veered from like a hot review to like something more sentimental. Like I felt like I was reading a greeting card there. I like it. I love it. Velvet, why should I go see An Evening with Leland Beckman?
Well, An Evening with Leland Beckman, I've spent many evenings with Leland Beckman. And something that's great is funny, very funny, very smart, but also, you know, he takes the bad, the dirty, the bad thing you don't want to talk about, and then makes it okay to talk about it. And it's hilarious. And it's like, you go away being like, man, my prolapsed ass is sexy as fuck, you know? And that is a gift. That's a real gift, to be able to be like, oh my gosh, you know, like I see this thing in a totally different light. And it's all because of this sexy low talker, bass playing, big bear of a man. Yeah.
I feel the love. It is so palpable. And I'm having so much fun with you guys. My last question, I'm just curious to know, two performers, you know, one life that you share together. When you're getting ready for shows like this, do you find the other person is your best critic? Do you find yourselves, or, you know, do you operate in a bubble? I'm going to call on you when I need something, or, you know, is there kind of like a Chinese wall where you might not be like sharing your work as much? Like, how does that work out for you guys briefly?
I'll go first. I think it kind of evolves all the time, you know, for like how we need support from each other. Like sometimes support might look this one way. Sometimes it's, oh my God, this video editing does not work. Please help me. You know, stuff like that. But something that I try to do is, how do you say that? Radical positive reinforcement. It's good. Go. Do it. Because so much I find it's, you know, like we stop ourselves, you know, like a lot in life, like in everyday life and everything. And I feel my personal thing for being a performer is, part of being a performer is to let it out, is to let it out and to show and to laugh and to let it go as far as it can go, because that also gives a release to the audience, when the audience can then, you know, like take that energy from you, that you're releasing it, and then the audience can release it, and then sort of you have that experience together. So that's something, is like, you know, if Leland never asks, like, is this too dirty, you know, but I'd always, because I would always say, go more, go as far as you can go. And I think it's vice versa. Like, I have some acts, like there's one act I'm going to talk about because it's actually didn't make it into the show, because it's the reason why I didn't get into the show, Velvet's Greatest Tits, is because I paint my body completely in gold. The song is Treasure of My Love. And I did it originally for like a pirate themed show. And so I was sort of the treasure. I was like the painted gold lady, which is, you know, a burlesque trope. But then at the end, because it's sort of like a box, a treasure box, and I'm the treasure. And then at the end, I pull a gold coin out of my pussy. Because that is like, you just go far. Go as far as you can.
Yeah.
No. Because it's it just gives a relief to everybody else, I find. And so that's, you know, that's the kind of advice I try to give to this kind, not advice, but support I try to give to Leland. Yeah.
Leland, how does that work out for you as a performer to have this kind of sounding board at home?
It's amazing. Like, I, you know, in previous relationships, not everyone has been supportive of what I do. And, you know, not everyone likes these songs, especially when they have to hear them, you know, practiced in the other room over and over. But, you know, it's really nice having a partner who is also a performer. And, you know, she's been training as a musician for years and years, like since she was a child. And I'm more of a self-taught. You know, I just kind of figured out how the bass works so that I can put some music to my dirty poems. And so having this like trained music teacher in the house kind of pushing me towards some of the basic concepts, the rudiments of harmony, and showing me, oh, maybe you should learn how to read music. That might be a good idea. Or maybe you should hear. For Christmas, here's some voice coaching lessons. And you know, it's just, I feel like I've upped my level being with her, and it's, you know, I just see it continuing, and I feel like we push each other, we support each other. And it's the only downside is the songs that she is practicing in the other room, they are burned into my brain now. And I when I close my eyes, I hear that classical music tune going over and over, and you know, I can't wait to hear it on stage, and it's going to be great. But sometimes I gotta just go for a walk.
You're both such treasures, and it's I thank you for letting us peek behind the curtain on your relationship and also your artistic process. Thank you so much. Looks like you're gonna have so much fun at the Fringe this year, Putti Campus. Thank you, Leland and Velvet.
Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah, thank you, Sarah. Thank you so much.
That was Velvet Latouche and Leland Beckman. She presents her show, Velvet's Greatest Tits, and he is launching his new album with his Fringe show, An Evening with Leland Beckman. This is happening at Petit Campus, or Venue 4, for the Fringe Festival. Both shows begin June 10th. Tickets and more information at montrealfringe.ca or call 514-849-FEST. You can follow Leland at lelandbeckman.com, LeghLandBeckman.com, and Velvet at velvetlatouche.com, VelvetLatouche.com. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Tonight you heard Martine Danneval, the new co-artistic director at Festival Transamérique, on until June 9th. Miriam Cummings, her show, The One, coming to Freestanding Room June 10th. As well as Leland Beckman and Velvet Latouche, both launching solo shows at The Fringe June 10th as well. A very big thank you to my guests. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under the archives. Thank you to Jack Soler, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah DeA. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca. Have fun, stay safe, happy fringing. Up next is Grey Matters.
I slept too little and drank too much. Anyway, get out of bed like this. Oh, Christ.
Rise and shine with CKUT 90.3 FM.
Good evening and welcome to the June 2nd edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show, we have a lecture entitled Fascism and Resistance in India. It was delivered in Austin, Texas on April 19th of this year. The lecturer is Arundhati Roy. She's a world-renowned writer and global justice activist. The New York Times calls her India's most impassioned critic of globalization and American influence. She is the author of the novels The God of Small Things, for which she received the Booker Prize, and The Ministry of Utmost Happiness. Her book of interviews with David Barsamian is The Checkbook and the Other, and the Cruise Missile. Her essay books include My Seditious Heart and Azadi. Both are published by Haymarket Books. So without further ado, here's Arundhati Roy with her lecture, Fascism and Resistance in India.
What India has done in Kashmir over the last 30 years is unforgivable. An estimated 70,000 people, civilians, militants, and